Now that you have an overview of how carbohydrates are structured and how they function, we're going to take a deeper look at the structure and the biochemistry of carbohydrates. So you really get a feel for how they're working in the body and how to differentiate and how to guide your clients to choosing the best ones. So as usual, just a reminder that this presentation is not intended to replace a one-on-one relationship with a qualified health professional. It's not medical advice. And when you're sharing this information with your clients, you need to make sure that they're aware that you're educating them, you're giving them what they need to make sound decisions. But always, if they're under a care of a practitioner, they need to bounce the ideas by that practitioner to make sure that there's no contraindications to whatever medications or treatments they might be on. So let's first start with taking a look at the basic core structure of all carbohydrates, which is monosaccharides. And there are three main monosaccharides that we're going to be looking at. We have glucose, fructose, and galactose. Glucose is by far the most common, and it's the one that feeds directly into the Krebs cycle to provide us with energy. And it's found in not only as part of other sugars, disaccharides, which we'll look at it a little bit, but also as part of starches. Fructose is mainly found in fruit, but it's also commercially processed from things like corn, high fructose corn syrup. So fructose is found in various places and it has some issues and some problems. We'll be going into a lot more detail about glucose, fructose, galactose, the various sugars and how they're processed in the body in a separate video on sugar. And then finally, galactose is milk sugar. It's the single monosaccharide that is found when we break down lactose, which is the disaccharide milk sugar, into its single constituents. So galactose. And we'll look at the structure of the disaccharides in just a moment. So just to give you a review, each of these sugars is actually six carbon sugar. Glucose is arranged with a ring with six atoms at its core, and then the carbons are, five of those are carbons, and with the sixth carbon being as part of a side chain. And then they're also, another way that you might see them is with the carbons around the ring not expressed. So that's another way that you might see glucose expressed if you're looking at scientific literature. Fructose is actually arranged in a pentagonal structure, meaning five atoms around the ring. Four of those are carbon, one of them is oxygen, and then the other two carbons are found in side chains off of some of the other carbons. Again, that's the structure without the carbons around the ring expressed. You might see it that way in various scientific publications. Galactose, like glucose, is also arranged in a six-atom ring structure. And at first glance, it looks very, very, very similar to glucose. In fact, the naked eye, without somebody pointing it out, without you having a scientific eye, you probably wouldn't even see the difference. If you look more closely, you'll see that the carbons that are on the sides actually have their hydrogen and OH flipped. So they're actually the opposite of the way that the glucose looks. And that's it. I mean, so it's the same exact numbers of hydrogen, oxygen, and carbon, but it's just a slight difference in the structure that makes a big difference in the function. And there you go. That's the simplified version. So let's take a look at disaccharides. Disaccharide, as would be implied by the prefix di, which means two, are two monosaccharides put together. So sucrose is composed of a fructose and a glucose. Lactose is composed of a glucose and a galactose. And maltose is two glucoses put together. Sucrose is commonly known as table sugar. That's, you know, the stuff that's white and crystallized and in the sugar bowl, and you pop that on. one glucose, one fructose, and it gets broken down. There's a bond that's holding them together, and there are enzymes in the digestive tract that break them down into their monosaccharide constituents. So one fructose, one glucose. Lactose is the milk sugar, and they're bonded together, the galactose with the glucose, and that bond is significant because it's the enzyme lactase that actually breaks that apart. And in lots of folks, in fact, majority of the world over the age of 4 have very low levels of the enzyme lactase. You've probably heard of lactose intolerance. Lactose intolerance is the inability to make sufficient amount of lactase to break down the bond between the glucose and the galactose in the lactose molecule. This is significant. It means that the majority of the adult population throughout the world does not digest milk very well. And in fact, it makes sense because milk is a species-specific liquid produced by a mom to feed the babies. And really, in most species, milk is not continued to be ingested into adulthood, and specifically milk of another species. So the body is naturally just decreasing that function to make room for other functions so that, you know, we don't have a wasted function into adulthood. But because of our insistence and the milk is good for you, got milk, the milk mustaches, and all the things that the dairy industry is pushing to promote milk, that we are learning that we have a lot of people with lactose intolerance, but also there has been some adaptation over time so that people are, by necessity, learning how to digest that. And then finally, maltose is two of the glucoses put together. Maltose you'll see in fermented products like barley malt and fermented rice syrup. So barley and rice are actually starches to begin with, and so they have long, 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 long chains of sugar molecules chained together, glucose molecules chained together. Maltose is a shorter, it's a disaccharide form of that larger starch that gets activated when there's some fermentation happening to create a sweet product from a starch. So that's, in summary, the disaccharides. Sucrose, again, which is glucose plus fructose, lactose, which is glucose plus galactose, and maltose, which is glucose plus glucose. Again, we'll go into more details about the various sugars, how they function in the body, in our separate video on sugar. So let's look at oligosaccharides. Oligosaccharides are actually chains of monosaccharides put together, and it's usually anywhere from 3 to 9. You may see different textbooks refer to it as a little bit longer, a little bit shorter, but basically they're shorter chains. They're not quite disaccharides, but they are not quite polysaccharides, which are the longer starch chains. The one that you might have heard of most commonly is fructooligosaccharides. Fructooligosaccharide is a specific type of oligosaccharide that's found in various vegetables that can actually be used as a prebiotic, meaning that the bacteria in our guts will eat it up and love it and grow as a result. And we just really don't have the ability to break it down. So it really doesn't provide any caloric value to us as humans. And it does provide some really good food for the probiotics that grow in your gut, which makes it a good way to grow things. Now, there are a lot of different, let's just say, controversies over fructooligosaccharides. Some say that they actually can also feed bad bacteria and bad organisms like candida. The jury's out on that. So really it's a matter of testing people and seeing how they respond. There's a particular type of diet called the FODMAPs, which we'll get into more details on later in our course. And that is actually recommends that we remove all fructooligosaccharides from the diet because a lot of people can't digest them. So it's not a universal principle by any stretch. But when you're working with people who have difficulty digesting, then these are all the stones you just don't want to leave unturned, and making sure that they're not sensitive to fructooligosaccharides and that's causing bloating and gas is a good thing to do. So some of the others you might have heard of are amylose and amylopectin. And pectin is, that's particularly found in citrus, and you'll see modified citrus pectin used therapeutically. And pectin is actually one of the soluble fibers, meaning that it can dissolve in water, versus an insoluble fiber, which is stuff like wheat bran and cellulose, which cannot, they don't dissolve in water. They provide more roughage and a broom to sweep out and latch onto toxins and eliminate them from the body. So let's look at a little bit more detail on fructooligosaccharide. They actually, like I said, feed the good gut bacteria. They are not digestible by our pancreatic enzymes. They're also known as prebiotic. But the other thing that most people don't realize is that fructooligosaccharides can help promote calcium absorption, which can be a good thing if you're working with women who have a tendency towards osteoporosis. So this is a look, this is what we see as far as the breakdown product of a fructooligosaccharide. So if you look at GF, glucose and fructose, that's a sugar, that's called sucrose. If you add another fructose onto it, or another and another and another, all the way up to about 9, you have what's called the fructooligosaccharide. And then if you add a lot more of the fructose onto it, you have a fiber called inulin. And inulin has a sweet flavor, but again, we're not able to break those down. Now that could be a blessing or it could be a curse. If there is some disruption in gut flora and disruption of normal way that the gut is working, then not being able to absorb these can actually create a fermentation process, a negative fermentation process that happens lower down in the gut, which can lead to gas and bloating and indigestion. But what are some of the food sources of fructooligosaccharides? Well, we've got Jerusalem artichoke. We've got yacon, which is a root that grows in South America, very common food there. And it's actually used and made into a syrup, which is very sweet, but generally does not increase blood sugar and generally does not cause issues, the same issues that sweeteners do. Again, test, 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 test. What are we going to do? We're going to test. You can ask your client to try yacon if they're really looking for a sweetener and see how that works. And see if they get bloating and gas because they may have some issues with handling the FODMAPs, which we'll talk about later. Blue agave, not something I highly recommend because it also has a lot of fructose in it, but blue agave supposedly has more FOS in it than it does fructose. Jury's out. Bananas have fructooligosaccharides, onions, chicory root. Chicory root is a new kid on the block in terms of sweeteners. Chicory root contains a fair amount of FOS, and as a result, it's been recently turned into a syrup that's used as an alternative sweetener. I've tried it. It actually tastes quite sweet, and the good news is it does not raise my blood sugar, and I don't get gas from it. So yay, it's a good one for me. Again, you're going to have to test, 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 test with your clients. If they really need something sweet and they're looking for that sweet, well, we're looking for things that don't cause a lot of disruption. So it's worth a try. As I could say that also Jerusalem artichoke, there's actually a manufacturer that's making a Jerusalem artichoke syrup, which has a slightly sweet, almost maple syrup type of a flavor or molasses type of a flavor. But again, doesn't seem to have the same blood sugar raising effects. Again, fructooligosaccharides, they are eliminated on a diet called the FODMAP diet. And we'll talk more about that in a bit. Other things that contain fructooligosaccharides are garlic, asparagus, jicama, tomatoes, and leeks. So good source of these, food for the good gut bacteria that our body's not able to break down. However, if there's a disruption in the lower gut, in the large intestine, in some people, a small percentage of people, do not handle FOS very well, and it can cause bloating and gas. So let's take a look at polysaccharides. What are polysaccharides? Well, polysaccharides, also known as starch, and starch is a long chain of glucose molecules put together, and it repeats and repeats and repeats, and there's various lengths and sundry things depending on what food you're looking at. The other polysaccharide, which is really super important to us, is our storage form of sugar, which is glycogen. So our body in there, in its infinite wisdom, can take all these chains and chains and chains of glucose, put them together, and store it in the liver and in the muscles, so that when we need sugar and there's none to be found in the body, there's a process called glycogenolysis, which causes the breakdown of glycogen into sugar. And that glycogenolysis is typically stimulated by a hormone called glucagon, which is secreted by the pancreas. It's the opposite of its cousin or sister, however you want to call it, insulin. So insulin causes the taking of the sugar that's in the blood and putting it into the cells. Glucagon goes out to the liver and to the muscles, finds the storage form of sugar called glycogen, which is basically mammal starch, so to speak. It's our storage form, breaks down the bonds between and increases the blood sugar. This is really important because for folks who get cranky and irritable if they miss meals, there's a disruption in this process, because we should be able to go a long time without having food and keep the blood sugar up through the action of glucagon breaking down muscle glycogen. Now, not everybody's functioning properly, and in some cases, there's not a lot of glycogen stored in the muscles, in which case, then we need to find other forms of glucose to raise the blood sugar, which causes an emergency response from the adrenals to produce cortisol and adrenaline, which will then go out and break down fat stores and the muscle stores. This is a very complicated process, and we have a whole module devoted to all of the hormones that are involved in keeping blood sugar steady. So we'll revisit that then. So what is cellulose? Well, cellulose is fiber. Cellulose is actually fiber. And what is it? It's just, again, a long chain of glucose, but it's got a particular bond that we don't have enough of the cellulase enzyme to break down, which is good. So instead, it goes out basically the way it comes in and causes a brooming effect on the gut. So cellulose, really, the mystery is really, it's just a repeated chain of these glucose molecules stuck together, but the bond is tight and we don't have the enzymes as humans to break it down. Therefore, it acts as a broom and has no caloric value. The last group of sugars that we're going to look at are sugar alcohols. They're also known as polyols, which is the P in FODMAP. They really don't contain any ethanol, in spite of the fact that they're called an alcohol. The reason that they're called alcohols, sugar alcohols, is because they're similar in structure to glucose, except they have extra OH, which is alcohol in chemistry terms. So sugar alcohols have a sweetness that's similar to sucrose, and they have fewer calories than sugar. Some have more, some have less. And we'll revisit the sugar alcohols in our sugar presentation and go into the various types of sugar alcohols and how many calories each one has and what the relative benefits are of them. The good news is they don't generally raise blood sugar, or they only raise blood sugar a little bit. We'll look at that when we look at our sugar module. So that concludes our deep dive into the biochemistry and the structure of our carbohydrates. And we'll talk more about the clinical applications on the next video.